Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education, presented by Tom Breeze. The Key Concepts of a Literacy Curriculum with Sarah McCurlin. Hello and a warm welcome back to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, where I am podcasting all by myself today and therefore even more grateful than usual that I've got a guest who's got some interesting things to say to me. Sarah McCurlin, welcome.
Thank you very much, Tom. Thank you.
And lots of us at Cardiff Met will know you quite well, but our wider listenership may not be familiar with you. So do you want, before we kind of dive into our very interesting topic today, do you want to just give the listeners a sort of potted history of who you are and what you do and where you work?
I currently work for Caerphilly County Borough Council as part of their school improvement team. I'm Principal Curriculum and Skills Lead. Prior to that, I worked for the EAS, and prior to that, I was a senior leader in a comprehensive school within Caerphilly. So a long background in teaching and education.
And the reason you're here today is because you have just completed your doctorate. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We were debating before we started recording what we're going to call you, whether it's Dr. Pending Sarah McCurlin or nearly Dr. Sarah McCurlin. But you have completed your doctorate, and it's on a particularly interesting topic for those of us based here in Wales, where any long-term listeners of the podcast will know we've been through some big education reforms, which have included a new curriculum framework, which puts a lot more of the onus on schools, departments, teachers, subject leads to design their own curriculum using a much more sort of broadly framed curriculum framework, and that has thrown up challenges for those schools and those teachers because there's a whole skill set that they haven't really needed before. So can you just explain, I mean, this is the ultimate doctoral viva question, I suppose, isn't it? This is going to bring back memories for you. Can you just explain what it was in that context that you set out to do in your doctoral study, which was aimed at supporting some of those teachers as a sort of end product, wasn't it?
Yeah, so my research aimed to support teachers' curriculum design capacity by implementing a concept-based curriculum within languages, literacy, communication, focusing particularly on English and looking at that idea of progression from 3 to 16. So as part of that, I delivered professional learning. I worked with teachers from across a local consortia region, and we looked at curriculum design and what progression looks like within concepts. And the focus was specifically on concepts in line with the Welsh Government vision for curriculum within Wales, using a process approach to curriculum rather than a content or product approach. We identified the need within teachers' capacity to develop curriculum. When you look back at teachers' experience, it's tended curriculum tends to have been delivered or written by heads of English, leads for English, and it tends to be more of a product exam-driven approach, planning backwards from GCSEs, and that's led to PowerPoint delivered lessons where people are getting through that content to get to that end product rather than slowing that down and thinking about the skills and concepts, the knowledge that the pupils need to develop along the way.
And the comparison we often draw when we're talking about Wales is with our bigger neighbour over the border, England, where we tend to kind of say that, you know, in a broad brush way, there's a little bit more specificity over there in terms of what they're trying to do. They sort of nail things down a little bit more, whereas Wales has really consciously tried to break that open a little bit, tried to make it more of an autonomous thing for schools. But as you say, I mean, English in particular, I always used to find this when I was in school teaching, I always felt like the English department were in the hottest of hot seats when it came to the pressure of those GCSEs and those A-levels.
Yeah, it's always been you know, particular focus. English is so important. If you can read and write effectively, if you can talk and communicate, that opens up every other subject. So the pressure really is on for English teachers.
And not only that, but further down in the age range, we know, you know, if you've been listening to this podcast, we know that there's been quite a lot of news about the place of phonics in the curriculum framework, a suggestion that should have been specified. And really interestingly, quite recently, Welsh Government have agreed and have updated that advice. But rather than look at those sort of quite nuts and boltsy things, you decided to take a different approach, didn't you? And that was to look at the idea of concepts in the curriculum.
Yeah, we started off by looking at what concepts would be embedded within the curriculum documentation. We used the what matters statements, and we went through in other subject areas. The concepts are really spelt out. So, for example, in history, humanities, the concepts are there. But within English, a conceptual approach, the concepts aren't really spelt out. So in some countries, such as Australia, New South Wales, that there's a clearly defined list of concepts. In Australia, they've identified 15 concepts. Diddo in England has identified 6. So Ericsson from America, they haven't identified. They have left it open to individuals to identify concepts. So there's no agreed body of knowledge in terms of concepts within the field of English, which makes it problematic in itself. And if you go down a purely skills route where you're just focusing on the processes of reading, writing and oracy, I think you miss out on that opportunity, because education really, as Corbell says, should be more about learning beyond the everyday experiences and knowledge to help pupils, children to think abstractly and to bring their understanding, to move that beyond their personal experience. So if you're just focusing on oracy reading and writing, you, without making that link to those underlying concepts, I think you miss out on that abstract thinking. So you know, that's the direction we were really pushing forward in.
And because you were then doing this research project, you had this great opportunity to sit down with a bunch of teachers, and it was both primary and secondary, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Who kind of were in that hot seat, whether it was in a sort of literacy coordinator sense in primary, or whether they were perhaps heads of department or kind of, you know, it's quite senior in the department in secondary, to dig into these concepts. And what was the general sort of mood or vibe you got off those teachers once you got them together and started digging in?
Well, one of the aims of the project was to look at that idea of collaboration, which has traditionally been more about looking at portfolios and, you know, establishing this is a level 5 or this is, and verifying those portfolios. So it was moving beyond that type of experience to make it more worthwhile, to understand the learning that's already taken place in primaries, for primaries to understand where that learning is moving forward. And so that shared understanding, hopefully by having a joined up approach, we'd be able to take pupils further. So bringing those teachers together was really important to strengthen that transition. But when we started to explore the ideas of concepts, teachers found it very difficult. They traditionally worked in terms of oracy reading and writing without linking those abstract concepts and making it explicit. So it was difficult for teachers to actually do this. So as we moved through the professional learning, I ended up modelling and giving them more information and giving them definitions to help them identify the concepts, to explain why they're worthwhile, why they're important and what that looks like. They really struggled then to identify progression within the concepts. So again, it was about giving them models, letting them play around, move them around. You know, if you're looking at the concept of rhetoric or narrative, What does that look like in primary, and what does the progression look like? How do learners move forward within those concepts? So drawing on the expertise of primary and secondary to really shape their understanding, but because they found that really difficult, and you know, when you're sat in a room with other professionals, it is hard, you know, without drawing on other wider documents. So it was bringing all that knowledge together to enable them to really understand what that progression looked like.
And this is the tricky thing, isn't it, about a framework which grants that autonomy, but doesn't necessarily grant, on a sort of pragmatic level, the space and the time to do that. Because, you know, all of us who've been teachers will know that, you know, a bunch of teachers struggling with that is absolutely kind of no judgment on those teachers, because they are so busy teaching an enormous number of hours a week. And the other thing as well is that I certainly found it was actually quite hard to get out and speak to other subject specialists. And so an opportunity to do that must have been really good. But it's kind of, I kind of feel for those teachers that stuff was not there for them. I mean, thank goodness you were there with a doctoral hat on to give them those goodies.
Yeah, and time constraints came up as a theme in the pilot project. And, you know, they really valued the opportunity to come together to develop that shared knowledge, that shared language, that shared understanding. You know, one of the findings was when different aspects within the concept are being taught, so various techniques, they might have different names. You know, at a simplistic level, nouns might be called naming words, but you know, as you move through, some teachers didn't actually understand some of the more complex terminology. They had to Google it to make sure they were clear about what that meant. So making sure that shared language, that shared understanding is really valuable to develop that progression.
As another advert for deep subject knowledge, isn't it, really, in teachers? It's very, very hard to work in such a broad curriculum if you haven't got that underpinning of subject knowledge.
Yeah, and one of the findings, schools had relied very heavily on genre theory, you know, based on the Sydney School and Welsh Government documents, the Yellow Books from 2010, and that idea of genre theory where schools rigidly follow the six non-fiction genre types. And what we found was that some schools spend a half term on each of those six. But some teachers will naturally be led towards their favourite genre, whereas other genres will be left. Or when you look at instruction as a genre, you know, if you're thinking about progression within that, you've probably reached your limit by year two or three. So, you know, but that's still being taught in year six and beyond. So it's about making sure that if genre theory is being used, the concepts are being made explicit. When I looked at books, as part of the research, when I visited schools, and schools were very generous in sharing the work that pupils had done, but sometimes the restriction to genre theory made it difficult to see progression. So, for example, in year five, pupils wrote a report on one country. It tended to be more about writing to inform, based on internet research. In year six, they then wrote another report on a different country, but because the concepts weren't being made explicit and the audience and purpose wasn't really clear, it again was just writing to inform with very little progression between the two. So as part of our conversations, we thought about what was the purpose of that writing. Were they writing to inform, and if so, how was that progressive? Were they writing to, if it's a report, how are they drawing on evidence? How are they perhaps showing bias to one particular way of thinking? How are they drawing on those wider concepts to make it progressive? So it was absolutely fascinating.
It is really interesting, isn't it? And it's amazing to think of all of these subject areas out there in the world kind of grappling with this difficult stuff. I mean, if just for the benefit of any listeners maybe who were not lucky enough to find themselves in a room with you doing this project, I know that you read really widely, sort of worldwide. It's easy for us in Wales to sort of assume we exist in a bit of a bubble. We're a very small country. But you went, I mean, you've mentioned Australia, you went really far and wide looking for your sort of inspirations, curriculum-wise and concept-wise. So I suppose, just for the benefit of anybody who hasn't been in person with you, where were some of the places, some of the writers, some of the ideas that you dug up when you did your initial reading, just so they can go find them?
I was really interested in the work of Ratter from New Zealand, although that tends to focus on knowledge. But as part of the work that we made sure that we had skills that inform those, the concepts, so knowledge how, knowledge to. I also looked at the work that MacPhail had done, building on Ratter's work. I mentioned the Sydney School and New South Wales, that sort of work. I looked at America and Ericsson and the work they've done, Canada. In earlier documentation as part of this doctorate, I also looked at the work in Scotland, Northern Ireland, as part of a policy learning approach. What can we learn from other countries who've embedded similar curriculum frameworks, and what can we learn from that to make sure ours really works and is really successful? Because when you give teachers such a high level curriculum to design from scratch, you know, that can be problematic in itself. So drawing on these wider experts, you know, was really important. I looked at the work of Appleby, looking at that idea of knowledge in action and how we can make sure that that dialogic thinking is embedded in everything we do. So I really looked widely to make sure that the research was embedded in, you know, the best findings from across the world.
And one of the interesting things about a professional doctorate, which is what you've done, an EdD as opposed to a PhD, is that the eventual aim is to have an impact on practice, which, you know, is a really attractive proposition, I think, for all of us whose identity still sort of lies in teaching. I mean, I did the PhD and I always struggled against this. What's the practical application, you know, and being told, well, you don't have to worry about that. But you did have to worry about that. You had to come up with an impact on practice. So what, having sort of sat down with these teachers and ascertained that there were, you know, it was tricky. It was trickier perhaps than people might have realised. Where did you go with that? Where did you take that? And what did you create that was potentially going to help them?
Well, initially I created curriculum design models that really take teachers through that process. Looking at concepts, looking at knowledge and skills, looking at knowledge in action, and then assessment for progression, specifically for progression that moves learning forward. So that was my initial starting point. But then as we moved through the professional learning events, it became clear that teachers needed that very solid understanding of progression within the concepts. So we produced, I think, about 7 progression maps that cover those wider concepts, looking at things like grammar, rhetoric, narrative, just to make sure they've got that clear understanding. So they've been produced and they're being used quite widely across the region that I worked in. We also produced a new text type overview that just really clarifies the different text types and their purpose, the audience, the language and layout that you might expect, just to help shape and not limit the work that's going on in schools to the you know, that very narrow focus on the 6 non-fiction text types, but just to open it up to have that wider focus on wider purposes.
Well, that must have been a, you know, a gift for some of these teachers. I mean, I'm interested. I don't know if this is a controversial question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because that's what I do. there has been a tendency with Curriculum for Wales at the framework, I think, having granted all this agency and all this autonomy to schools and teachers, that when it's become clear, as I think it has to a lot of people, that a lot of schools and teachers are crying out for a lot more support of the type that you're talking about, you do sometimes get this sort of, oh, don't kill the autonomy, don't kill the agency sort of cry. I mean, I'm guessing that you would argue, would you, that what you've created there is not killing the autonomy or the agency, but it's walking that line between the support and the freedom.
Yeah, and I would say it's strengthening teaching, because if these concepts are being revisited over time, so if you're looking at the idea of argument or rhetoric all the way across, you know, right down from primary school into secondary school, and if you're really making the techniques that fall under those concepts, that concept of rhetoric, if you're making them explicit, you're building that knowledge and you're developing, you know, a spiral curriculum in line with Brenner's thinking. So you've got that progression built in. So, you know, and the concepts can be applied to whatever curriculum, whatever topics or themes, but it just strengthens the learning. It makes it explicit. So you've got that progression.
It was interesting. The other day I was in our big studio doing a political special with Finola Wilson from Impact Wales and also Dr. Gareth Evans from the University of Wales Trinity St. David. He's their Director of Education Policy. And I asked the pair of them, having spoken to all these politicians who were, you know, putting their pitch for education policy, I asked the pair of them, you know, is curriculum for Wales, you know, should we be scrapping it? You know, one or two of the politicians had suggested to a greater or lesser extent we should, some of them have said we shouldn't. Both of my guests were very clear that scrapping it was just asking for another decade of pain. They were both very clear they felt there was a way that framework could be strengthened in the way that you're talking about there. So perhaps this is a signpost, perhaps, that we should be looking more widely at just providing this sort of extra support.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we met together, primary and secondary, you know, both sets of teachers from the different phases, they've both got their strengths. Primary practitioners, they're generalists, they teach every single subject. So it really helped to support them and develop their knowledge, their understanding of English teaching. But then again, there's a lot to learn from primary practitioners who spend, you know, all day with their class, their pedagogy, you know, that's been refined over time to really engage those pupils. So there's a lot to learn from them. And the same with, you know, the secondary, their expertise within the subject, within the discipline. There's a lot to learn from them. So bringing them together makes absolutely perfect sense, and developing that shared language to develop that understanding and applying those concepts, it strengthens what we've got, that framework working towards the four purposes. It just makes perfect sense.
And zooming out a little bit, I mean, let's not forget that, you know, you did this doctoral study, but you've also got a day job, which is in school improvement. You were initially in a regional consortium. Now you're doing the same thing for one of the local authorities. How has doing a doctoral study actually had an impact on or changed what you do in the day job? Are you seeing any differences now in the way you approach things? Are you seeing impact out in the classroom based on the work that you've done?
Yeah, even though I'm not with the regional consortia, my team, they took on the idea and they've used it to strengthen not just within English but wider across the curriculum. Part of my land management responsibility was for humanities, expressive arts. So they've taken on board the idea of concepts. They've embedded it into their writing training, their reading training, and it's really having an impact. I think the day before the Viva, I had a message from someone in the regional consortia just to say how the work was transforming the work of a cluster and how they were using the concepts to really make sure that troublesome transition is much smoother and you've got that joined up continuum of learning.
Fantastic. Well, we are looking forward to hopefully reading some of your work in print eventually. But you are out there, you know, doing this work, aren't you, for your own sort of local area. So schools that are based in there, I'm assuming, can hopefully get in touch for a bit of help. You're working, did you say 34 professional learning schools?
Yeah, we've got, I think, about 83 schools in Caerphilly. 33 of them, I think, are LEED schools. So they develop and deliver their own professional learning. So I've only been there a very short time, but all the literacy leads in secondary have come together, and we're starting to develop, to collaborate, to shape our very own Caerphilly approach.
Well, you know what? It's nice to hear a sort of a positive story about navigating the curriculum for Wales, because we do hear quite a lot of criticism. I've done a certain amount of criticism about that sort of slight lack of detail and the impact that has on teachers. So it's just really nice to hear that somebody has kind of gone out and done something about it. Let's move on to our infamous short slots now. Something interesting, something to try. Let's do the something to try first, because I think it's more linked to what we've just been talking about. If our listeners are not lucky enough to be based in Caerphilly, what should they go ahead and try now, having listened to this?
I would have a look at your subject area, your area of learning and experience, and identify the concepts within that. You know, particularly within English, if you're an English or literacy teacher, identify the concepts and just see what progression looks like within those concepts.
And as you said, that's quite a hard thing to do, isn't it? I mean, did you just kind of winding back a bit here, did you get the impression that kind of getting together and doing that in a sort of dialogic way or in a collaborative way is really important? I mean, that feels like something you can't do on your own necessarily, because you can't see the wood for the trees.
Yeah, and it's making sure that it's revisited, so it builds. And you know, as a secondary English teacher, one of my my problems with teaching was the fact that punctuation, spelling, capital letters, that full stops, that just wasn't embedded. So I was going back, and then sometimes within the work, they would be trying to use more advanced punctuation, but they hadn't got the basics right. So just by having that shared understanding and progression, it means you can really focus on the basics, make sure that's right, and then you build that progression in.
Yeah, classic advice that, isn't it? Don't just move on because the plan says it's time. What about something interesting for our listeners then? I know this is off topic a little bit, but not in terms of your old job.
Well, I'm really enjoying reading the final trilogy, The Book of Dust, written by Philip Pullman. I'm on the final book, the Rosefield, at the moment, and I'm really enjoying that. So I would recommend that listeners go out and read the trilogy. And you know, obviously that's Philip Pullman, one of my old university lecturers. So
wow, goodness me, what was he like as a lecturer?
Really inspirational. Yeah, really inspirational.
Looks like he's inspired your future career really there, hasn't he? So yeah, nice one, Philip Pullman. You've done good. Well, thank you. I'm gonna say it, Dr. Sarah McCurlin. I'm going to jinx you now. No, it's all going to be fine. That has been really, really interesting, actually, a run around an area of curriculum for Wales and potentially with more solutions than problems. So that's quite good for us to see. Hope you've enjoyed that, whether you're in Wales or further afield. As ever, we'll be back with you in 2 weeks' time. You've been listening to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education, presented by me, Tom Breeze. The special guest this episode was nearly Dr. Sarah McCurlin from Caerphilly County Borough Council, and thanks to Sarah for joining us today. Podcast artwork is by Beth Blandford, and the music is by Cameron Stewart. Technical support from Peter Lamburn, the studio manager is Adrian Rapps, and the technical problems with the sound were all my own work. We'll be back in a fortnight with something else interesting. Until then, take care and enjoy teaching.